You're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and RadioReverb.com online. Welcome to the UK's only radio show about HIV and living a healthy life. It's the HIV Hour. On today's show, we feature a rundown of the latest news and talking points about living with HIV from the Brighton area and the world at large. Also, information on Brighton's HIV organisations and some other events. Do email us at hivhour@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at @HIV_hour and Instagram at @HIVhour. If you miss the show on a Thursday at 7 p.m, then you can listen again at 4 p.m. on Monday and at noon on Tuesday, or indeed catch up with an older show by going to the Listen Again page on RadioReverb.com.
Radio Reverb.
Good evening, everyone. How are you?
Very well. How's doing everyone well. Else?
Yep, doing good here.
We got a full house today, haven't we, everyone? Bit of a full house.
Full ass. Yes, why not?
Not that I normally play bingo, but, you know, the sun's coming out, so that's an opportunity to go on the Brighton seafront, isn't it? Are the bingo halls opening? Do you think they'll be opening soon?
I don't know, Sue.
Probably, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
I'm just assuming.
So the track we played at the beginning is, everyone will know, it's a sin, the Elton John and Ollie Alexander version, which was played.
Yes.
That's the BAFTA, not the BAFTAs, the Brits, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Brits. Yeah.
The Blit.
Yeah, that's good.
So, yeah, so.
Brilliant.
How is everyone? So how are you, Tony?
Doing okay, thanks, fella. Yeah, you? How are you and Sue and Stephen doing? What's been going on?
What have I been doing? Yeah, not too bad. Yeah, just getting with the positive voices and doing storytelling, which is, interesting and scary at the same time. Interesting
brilliant.
And scary.
No, brilliant. That's great. It's great to hear you're getting on well with that. And you too as well, Stephen. It's a brilliant thing to get involved with.
It's quite nice because Josh and I are in the same group, so we get to see each other.
It's good to have a comrade.
Yeah,
brilliant. Yeah, gosh.
And what have you been up to, Sue?
Oh gosh, I haven't put the pen down for the last couple of weeks, but I was in London last week actually, and I'm taking part in the national Terence Higgins Trust stigma campaign, which I'm very excited about, and I'll keep our listeners on the edge of their seat on what's going to be coming out. But I met some interesting people when I was in London. I met this gorgeous, and this is at our new Terence Higgins Trust office, this gorgeous rugby player. Right. Now, it's rugby player / porn star.
Oh, wow.
Yes, wow. And he had some fabulous outfits that he was being photographed. And I did thank him. And I said, thank you so much for the show. But it's all being done. And I'm not going to say too much about it now because we may have a bit of a launch when it all kicks off. But I know there's some really interesting people in THT and a lot of people outside of the Terence Higgins Trust taking part in this new major stigma campaign. So I've been quite busy with that and everything else. We done our first school talk last week in Brighton, and that was quite scary, guys, because you know we've been sort of in lockdown for the last year, but actually going into a school hall, I don't get scared often, and I was quite scared, but it was absolutely amazing. It was in Brighton, and you know what was so brilliant, you know, my project Positive Voices started in Brighton, and it was so appropriate to do our first face-to-face talk in our first Brighton school. So yeah, very busy week.
Oh, that's good. Kind of getting back to normal-ish,
yeah,
whatever that means. So we've got a great interview with a guy called Martin Jones, who he works in Eastbourne in the sexual health department of the hospital there. He also does the HIV care and support at Lewes Prison. So we've had a fantastic interview with him. So it's very insightful, isn't it, Sue?
Absolutely. And one thing that really sort of really resonated, that really sort of, you know, we talk about stigma a lot on the show, and quite rightly so, you know, anything to do with stigma, yeah, we're trying to highlight. And one of the things, not just him alone, but what, you know, him and his services are trying to do is break down the stigma of people in prison and going into prison. And one thing that sort of really sort of shot out to me is one of the questions we asked, and this will be, you'll hear this on the interview, what do you call, do we call people prisoners if they're in prison or getting into prisons? And what Martin said is, we call them residents. Residents, because residents mean they're only there for a short space of time. So yeah, they're trying to destigmatize, you know, and, you know, and we're talking about mental health and all. And I found that really, really intriguing. So really interesting, amazing interview with him.
Yeah, and he's very passionate about it as well. That's what came across in the interview, isn't it? So that's on later. Yeah, so, and also we've got, so you've got two stories, Stephen and Tony.
So, yeah, so my story is the Brit Awards and David Furnish, who is the husband of Elton John, of course. But David Furnish has also been a huge supporter and advocate for people living with HIV, and championing the cause of making people more aware of what HIV is nowadays. And he stood up on the stage. It was amazing to see. He stood up on the stage and just told people what HIV was now. You know, he said, we're refusing to let men, women and children die in shame. It's no longer a death sentence. And he spoke all about you equals you. And it was just amazing to see somebody stand up at an awards ceremony like that and just be so open and vocal and, you know, just seeable, you know, and hearable, you know, in talking about HIV. And obviously the connection is because Elton has just done It's a Sin, the song with Ollie Murs, Ollie Alexander even. You know, and so that has just happened. So there's a lot of talk about it at the moment. So it's great to see it being spoken about. And obviously every time people hear that song, it's going to be a little reminder, isn't it, of the programme. And yeah, so it's great.
Where was that? Well, that was the Brits, wasn't it? You said.
That was at the Brit Awards, yeah. So for anybody that doesn't know, the Brit Awards is an award ceremony that's done for music here in the UK. So it's on every year. So yeah, it was amazing.
What you got? What are you talking about this week, Tony?
It's just the US have been supplying HIV patients in Kenya with ARV treatments. And there's fear that Kenyan patients, HIV patients, will be... they'll run out of meds because the Kenya government has now slapped an $832,000 importation tax on the treatment coming through. It's all very political, but I thought it's just a really interesting story. And also it shows how the countries sort of, it's a really interesting story. And I, it's good. Yeah, it's just... shows how delicate the relationships are between these countries and within the companies.
Yeah. And it's so. I'm just thinking, Josh. It's so important because we talk about the UK, about what's happening, but you know, as we all know, and we're all aware that this is global. Yeah. You know, all of us have got to be together to end HIV and end stigma. And I think you're absolutely right, Tony, just even talking about what's going on overseas is incredibly important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we forget how fortunate we are as well, don't we, in the UK and other countries with medication and support and stuff. And we forget that other countries don't have that.
HIV Hour is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.
So welcome back to the HIV Hour on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. I'm with Sue and Martin Jones. Hi, Martin.
Hello.
You are the clinical nurse specialist at in Eastbourne for the East Sussex Healthcare NHS Trust. You work in the sexual health department, and Martin, he provides the HIV care and support at Lewes Prison.
That's right.
So welcome. Yeah, welcome.
Thank you very much. No, I'm pleased to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the show, actually. It's isn't it, Sue?
It is, and we were having a quick chat before we started recording, because we're still sort of not fully in the studio at the moment, so we're sort of
doing zooming.
We're still zooming out, and we were just having a chat with Martin on how one of the questions were put to Martin, wasn't the Josh, about, you know, what we call, do we call them inmates, do we call that, I mean, that's a question, isn't it, Josh?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so I can jump in there, and I'd say in the last year or so, a positive change in the prison, and they now call people who are in Lewes Prison residents.
Okay, yeah.
So it's a shift away from prisoners or other older terms, perhaps. Residence implies it's their temporary home, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And that's the point, because we're always talking about stigma on the show, and that's a form of, you know, breaking down a bit of the stigma, I suppose, in prisons. Would you not say so, Martin?
Yeah, I think exactly that. You know, prisoners makes it sound like it's something society is doing to you. Mm-hmm. Resident sounds like it's a place that you're living at the moment, albeit not one that you've chosen to live in.
Exactly.
It's not as harsh as it. It's like inmate is quite a harsh word, isn't it? And yeah, definitely. Martin, could you just let our listeners know what your role is and what you do?
Yeah, certainly. So I've been going into the prison now for 12 or 14 years as a clinical nurse specialist. And what we provide there is a sexual health clinic, and additionally, any routine care for people who are living with HIV. So mostly that's people already diagnosed who find themselves in prison. And occasionally it's somebody who is newly diagnosed through testing whilst they're in clinic. But the latter is a relatively rare occurrence in my experience.
So what you're saying, Martin, the stats perhaps show up that it's mainly people that are actually living with HIV before they enter the prison system. Do you think there's more people on that sort of side than actually getting diagnosed when they're arrested
in prison?
Very much
so.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Very much so. And so our job is to ensure that people receive the standard of HIV care that they would expect to receive if they weren't resident in Lewes Prison.
Of course.
And we work very hard to make sure that's the case. So, for example, they should continue to have uninterrupted antiretroviral therapy. Mm-hmm. They should have monitoring at the time that they would expect it if they weren't in prison. And so forth and so on. And we're very proactive at pursuing those things, and are well supported by prison healthcare in doing so.
Sure.
So what are the kind of the main issues for people who are living with HIV then in prison? Is it just to get that, taking those tablets and keeping that regime going and
Let's start with tablets, because that's an interesting place to start, because being arrested and finding yourself in prison can bring with it a certain amount of chaos, which is not very good for adherence to any form of treatment. So it's not uncommon for people at those junctions, either in police stations or later in the prison, to have had a short interruption in treatment. The police and the prison work hard to try to make sure that doesn't happen, but nonetheless, it does happen sometimes. And of course, at the time of arrest, it may be that somebody living with HIV doesn't want to say that to whoever is arresting them.
It's that disclosure. It's that the whole thing about disclosing, you know, about HIV. And one thing I'm thinking of immediately, okay, they enter the prison system. Have you found, Martin, that because they're in a situation where they don't want other people to know inside prison that they're living with HIV, that they may not want to or find it quite difficult to take that medication, perhaps in front of other prisoners? Has there been any problems and issues that have happened in those ways?
Yeah, I think in some ways that happens. People are concerned. It's a stigma thing, isn't it? So
yes,
I'm speaking to somebody this week and he's just concerned about the labelling on his pot of medicines because... Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's allowed to have a month's worth in his possession, but he doesn't want the person sharing his cell to read the label and then do a bit of research and perhaps find out what those medicines are for. So he's very conscious about how he stores them and if he comes to see me in healthcare, not leaving them behind in his cell and so forth. So, yeah, there are those issues to consider. I think combining the HIV and sexual health clinics is a helpful thing because you could be coming to healthcare for either reason. And broadly, you could be coming to healthcare for lots of other things because I'm running a clinic at a time when other clinics are also being run. And broadly, when residents are fetched to come from their wings to the healthcare wing, they're just picked up by prison officers to go to healthcare. It's not specified what the reason would be.
And Martin, here's another little quick question. So would the residents in Lewis Prison have their medication on them, or do they have to access them from another person? Are they kept in, you know, are they kept on their person? You say that they're given a month. I mean, this is just quite interesting, actually.
So that will depend very much upon decisions made in the prison and somebody's behaviour whilst they're in the prison. So generally, when people arrive, the prison doesn't know them yet and has to find out, can they be trusted with a day at a time, 7 days at a time, 30 days at a time.
Right. But
the prison is committed to supporting adherence. And so we can quite quickly get most people onto what they would do at home and is just have a whole pot on the go at a time. Sometimes it's helpful to do a day at a time because some people who we see in clinic, and if you think more broadly about the prison population, you know, people are more likely to have mental illness, and they're more likely to be homeless. And both of those make it harder sometimes to always take HIV medicines all the time at the right times. So it can be a chance to stabilize things. And so we might monitor that a bit more closely at first, and as people develop their confidence, get over the sort of hump of side effects when they're restarting, give them more at a time. So... often, for some people, their HIV management can be somewhat better whilst they're in prison.
Like a regime, isn't it?
I was thinking that might be true for their mental illness as well. That, you know, people don't always take their medicines to manage mental illness. Again, taking them regularly in prison can stabilise things for them.
I was just thinking about, do like the prison officers get HIV training and...
They do. There are all sorts of trainings now, more broadly on bloodborne viruses. For a number of reasons, to manage people who are living with bloodborne viruses appropriately. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about that wider category, then hepatitis C is more common in the prison, mm-hmm. because unfortunately a lot of people in prison are either there because they use drugs themselves or their crimes mm-hmm. are associated with drug using. In my opinion, the country has progressively treated people who use drugs or are associated with that in less compassionate ways and is more inclined to put people into prison perhaps than we were 20 years ago.
Sure.
Yeah.
So Martin, I'm just thinking, so is there testing done in Lewis prison? Is there testing if people want it, or to testing for, testing for HIV or testing for other STIs? Is there routine checkups, tests for those sorts of things in Lewis Prison?
Yes, there is. So the prison has targets to test. I can't remember the percentage. It's quite high to test everybody coming into prison for bloodborne viruses, and that's a point of care test.
Right.
And it's a panel which tests for HIV, hepatitis B and hepatitis C. And so a lot of the men coming in do opt for that.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to STIs, again, you may have come across the chlamydia screening program and the idea people can do self-testing. So they have those packs to issue to men as they come into prison or as they interact with primary care later on.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a lot of testing and there are targets. And we contribute to the achievement of those targets.
Of course. And Martin, do the guys in Lewis Prison have access to other therapies? I mean, because, for instance, perhaps someone maybe just newly diagnosed, like you said, entering the prison service. I mean, we know, don't we, Josh, that a lot of people that are newly diagnosed, some need to go through sort of therapy or counselling to get to grips with that. I mean, is that available at Lewis Prison, Martin?
So I'm committed to trying to make sure that people would get what they would expect if they weren't in the prison. Now, some things are harder. So I've not been in a position yet, for example, because new diagnosis is uncommon.
Right.
But I've not been in a position where I wanted a peer mentor, for example, and you may have interviewed in previous episodes peer mentors from the Sussex Beacon.
Yes.
But if it arose, then I'd be very committed to exploring it to find out what might be possible. I've seen, interestingly, some informal peer mentoring. And there was a guy who was in a few years ago, a very interesting young man, and he came regularly to the clinic and had quite a good experience of being in prison. And co-presented with me afterwards at a national conference for nurses.
Wow.
And talked about his experience of HIV care in the prison. Now, he was interesting, coming back to your question about peer mentoring, because he got to know a couple of people during his time. There seemed to be ways that, for example, discreetly, gay men may find one another in the prison and be supportive and chat to one another. And similarly, he had been identified, I think, by the prison officers as somebody who was living with HIV and managing himself well. And they asked him to chat to a couple of guys who came in who were struggling both with being in prison for the first time and managing HIV at the same time. So that was interesting to see an informal.
And that really helps, doesn't it? It helps to have that experience as well, doesn't it? To talk to someone who's been in the same experience as you.
And, especially, you know, someone entering that prison service for the very first time, that must be daunting enough. But to be find out you're newly diagnosed with HIV as well, that must be a massive, massive thing to deal with, I'm thinking.
Yeah, and absolutely, it can be. Because your normal support mechanisms aren't around you. And you couldn't ring THT or go online and use a forum. So a lot of things that we might recommend to people who are newly diagnosed aren't immediately available to them. But you asked more broadly about support services in the prison, and because they're dealing with a lot of mental illness and because prisoners are stressful experience for many people, then there are all sorts. So, for example, out of COVID times, there is an LGBTQ plus group which meets. There are trained listeners on the wings, and those are residents who've had some training in peer support for people who are in the prison. You can go to some, they wear a listener t-shirt, so you can find them on your wing and just speak to somebody with some training about how it's going for you, particularly if it's not going well. And then there are all of the mental health services, and a lot of the nurses have a mental health background, and there are psychologists, psychiatrists, waiting lists for those things. But nonetheless, there's a plethora of those mental health interventions in the prison, and then a drugs team as well.
Gosh.
So I was going to ask about, is PrEP available in prison?
Yeah, very much so. And PrEP. So I was very pleased when the PrEP Impact trial was running. I asked if I could enroll somebody who was in the prison, and they were very open to that. And he had PrEP because he was sexually active on his wing with other men. And if he was on the outside, he'd have been having it. And NHS England were very open within their study protocol to enrolling him as well. And I know when he was moved to another prison, he was able to continue in PrEP Impact.
Wow.
Right. Yeah, that's great stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Is that like in is that adopted in most prisons, do you know? Or is that just each individual prison is different, have different ways of doing it?
And all prisons will have their own way of working, just as all HIV clinics have their own idiosyncrasies. But broadly, there's a national standard of care, and those going into prisons should be seeking to meet those standards. Interestingly, I know that the British HIV Association is about to take an audit of HIV care in prisons. So they've got a working group just to look at that, which is a good thing. Actually, it might be the British Association for Sexual Health and HIV. It's BASH, not Beaver. But nonetheless, that's a national look, which is a good thing.
I mean, it just seems, you know, the setup you have there at Lewis Prison just seems brilliant, doesn't it, Josh? And I suppose that's why Josh and I are asking, you know, in other prisons across the UK, you know, would there be the same? But like you say, there's going to be an audit too, and they should be following similar guidelines to what you do in Lewis Prison.
Yeah, I think historically we know from earlier surveys and audits, and these are quite old now, but National AIDS Trust, along with the Howard League, have looked at standards of care for bloodborne viruses. And over the years, particularly a couple of decades ago, things weren't good enough. And so what I'd say is that for many of us who go into prison to deliver HIV care, for example, there is a vocational commitment to making it as good as possible.
So,
I'd be reasonably optimistic that the audit should have reasonably good findings. There are a lot of things about being in prison that might make some of the findings more disappointing than they would be outside of prison. For example, the week before this, I turned up for a clinic and they had national security people in because of a security incident on a wing. And it meant that once I was in the prison, I wasn't allowed to leave. Nobody could move. But it also meant that nobody could be brought to my clinic.
Oh, gosh.
And so men who were expecting to be seen in clinic that day simply had to wait on their wings. And so there are lots of frustrations. And it could be that there aren't enough prison officers some weeks. Because of COVID, the waiting areas have had a reduction in the numbers that can come at one time.
Of course.
Sometimes, because of COVID, the regimen in prison's been quite tough for people. You know, in their cells for 23 hours a day, and then for that precious hour, there's a lot to do. They tell me, you've got to have your shower, do your laundry, do so many things. And if the prison officers turn up at that moment when it's your hour and the option is come to healthcare or change your underwear, you might be stuck with the same underwear then for several days if you don't do that. So some things mitigate against care happening at the time when it is planned. And then you have legal things. So people might have a video conference or a video call rather with the courts at the time when an appointment is booked. And then very frustratingly, especially for the men who are in prison, they can be at almost no notice moved to another prison. Not for no reason. It's not part of what the authorities are trying to do, but sometimes it happens. And so that again is disruptive. So some things get in the way of doing all the things that you plan to do at the time that you plan to do them.
I suppose it's just like working with the, you know, the changes that you're not ready for, and like you say, and you just got to sort of go with, you know, manage the circumstances, I suppose.
And then sometimes we find that somebody's been released from court, which is really good for them. And then we need to scrabble around quickly to make sure that the clinic they're going back to knows that they'll be coming along, when they might need some more medicines, give them any update of any monitoring we did whilst they were in the prison, and just try to make sure that the care continues.
I was going to ask that, actually. What happens to with residents who are from another country?
So in the UK, people living with HIV are entitled to free HIV care, no matter where they're receiving it. And so that continues in the prison. Again, I can give you an example of a couple of people, both of whom had been sentenced because of crimes that would mean at the end of their sentences they would be deported, and that's part of the harshness of the regime sometimes. And all that I can do as a nurse is work with that. On both occasions, through a network of European HIV nurses, I was able to identify a clinic and a nurse in the city to which they would be returning, and to tee them up with a contact. And the standard of care is that they should go with at least 3 months of antiretroviral therapy, so that when they land in the country of destination, they haven't got to scrabble around and find a clinic straight away, but they can sort out housing and sort out other things. And then after a couple of months, engage with the clinic that I've tried to set them up with. And on both occasions, I sent them a summary of all of their HIV care whilst they'd been in the UK, so that the clinic would be up to date. The other thing we did, one was a newly diagnosed man, and before starting him on treatment with the nurse in Lithuania, I think, we identified antiretroviral therapy that he would be able to continue when he went to Lithuania at the end of his sentence, rather than starting him on something which might not be available there.
Mm.
So, yeah, we try pretty hard to make sure that treatment and care continues.
Mm. Which is great, yeah.
Another thing we can do is put people on a medical hold. So, for one, he also had hepatitis C, and we wanted to just make sure he'd had a proper review in a joint HIV and hepatitis C clinic. So we are able to request a medical hold, and that meant that his deportation was delayed until he'd had a proper workup, and then there was a plan in place for him when he went to his country of origin. But he didn't just go knowing nothing. And so the medical hold, yeah, we can't use it for just anything, but that was agreed by the prison governor as an appropriate thing to do.
Seems like you're doing some fantastic work there,
yeah,
Martin.
I'm just
the work that you're doing is just amazing, and I can hear the passion of in your voice on, and quite rightly so. I mean, our mission, you know, to anyone that is living with HIV in the UK or comes into the UK, has access to medication, has access to not having stigma and discrimination, and that's what we shout and bang about all the time, isn't it, Josh? Regardless, yes, whether you know you land yourself in a situation, a resident in prison or wherever, you know, and we're very passionate about making sure that everyone has access to healthcare, medication, you know, living with HIV and all the other things as well. Wouldn't you say so, Josh?
Absolutely, support it and the sport, which is so important as well, isn't it? So, yeah. Anything else? Question, Sue?
No, I think Martin has just sort of reeled away with every. I was literally ticking things off as Martin was talking. So he's got me, you know. I mean, it's just I just can't get over the amazing work and the passion that you have, Martin, and the work that you do in Lewis Prison. It's just, and I hope, you know, I hope people look at you and think, you know, that's how things should be done and have to be done, you know?
Well, so I think, yeah, it's a simple formula for me. You know, I try to imagine if I was living with HIV and in a prison, yeah, what would I hope to experience? And it's the same with people who come to the clinic here in East Sussex. Yeah, I'm trying to be the sort of nurse that I would want to receive care from. Yeah, whilst responding to whatever it is that other people need. So yeah, I think it's a simple formula for nursing, really, is treat people in the way that you might like to be treated yourself.
Exactly.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Martin. That's been really insightful. I'm just amazing to listen to you.
Been brilliant to have you on the HIV, and I know we're going to have lots of people responding to this, you know. And if you know, if any listeners out there have got any questions that you would like us to ask Martin, you know, you can contact us on thehivhour@gmail.com, or I think we've got a Twitter page as well, haven't we, Josh?
Yeah, HIV_hour.
And it's just great as well that the HIV Hour is covering HIV in prisons, because as you pointed out at the beginning, it's an area where there's extra stigma and easy to forget about. You also are doing a great job in just, you know, putting the word out there. So thank you for inviting me.
An absolute pleasure, Martin. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
7.2 FM. Radio Reverb. Hi there, it's Tony, and I'm going to do a very short story on the issue at the moment in Kenya of their ARV drugs being in very short supply due to a standoff with the US government. As we know, taking our meds daily is actually what keeps us going. It keeps the virus low, it keeps our body's immune system better prepared. Plus also, in Kenya, there is 1.2 million HIV patients. And what they've said is, I've been reading an article, and one of the people, one of the guys there, states that they normally get between 3 and 6 months of ARV therapy every time they go to their clinic or whatever. Now, what's happened in recent times is, because of the shortage due to America and the Kenyan government, they've been given 1 week's dose for that week. Now, because of this, people aren't sticking to your meds, you know, once a day or whatever the regime is. Now, what they've been saying is that some of these patients actually have been skipping days or even skipping 2 or 3 days. Now, this is terrible. According to civil society organisations, treatment for children and lab reagents and testing for HIV in babies is already completely out of stock. Most countries also don't have any tuberculosis tests. This is terrible, really terrible. One, I'm going to go through why this is happening and what they're doing about it to see if they can help. In this article, Levi, an HIV-positive guy, states that as a result of the shortages and the rationing, Ms. Levi has resorted to skipping doses as he can't afford to go to the clinic every week. Obviously, this is in countries where they have, you know, not as good public transport as in the West or whatever. That can cause an issue. And obviously, these clinics are quite widely spread out. That he feels like, I'm playing with my immunity, said, I don't want to gamble with my life, but the government is gambling with my life. That's a very poignant statement. And also, we're very lucky here in the UK. We have amazing treatment for HIV and any other kind of diseases or problems. And I wonder what would happen if we were in that situation. It makes you think, it makes you wonder how we would cope. He goes on further saying, Jane Gatango, a spokeswoman for the US-based private firm Chematics, explained that the end of a 5-year contract between USAID and the Kenyan Medical Supplies Authority, USAID, instead asked the global health supply chain procurement and supply management implemented by Chematics and consortium partners to procure HIV, malaria and family planning commodities for Kenya. Civil society organisations in Kenya speculate the USAID decided not to use the Kenyan Medical Supplies Authority for the shipment because of allegations of corruption and mismanagement of COVID-19 funds. In response, the Kenyan government initially demanded 90 million Kenyan shillings, which is approximately $832,000 in importation taxes on the drugs, saying it wasn't a tax-exempt government-to-government donation, but was... but has since waived these taxes. But according to the statement from the local civil society organisations, the government is still insisting the drugs be delivered through its own system and not USAID's private partner. A US-based health expert from the civil society organisation operating in Kenya, who wished to remain anonymous, said the matter is at standstill as the new US administration sees this as a diplomatic issue, adding that the US president's emergency plan for AIDS relief refused to address the issue and the country's operational planning meeting for Kenya on Tuesday, citing the same reason. At a press conference in Nairobi on Tuesday, representatives from over a dozen civil society groups and people living with HIV said this recent shipment of drugs is only a band-aid for a larger problem. It's unlikely to lead to multi-month supplies and will continue to result in people skipping doses. They emphasised many people will likely skip doses because it's impractical for them to go to the clinic every week amid the COVID-19 movement restrictions, taking time off work, paying for transport each way and risking COVID-19 exposure. People often travel long distances for the ARVs to avoid bumping into people they don't know at the clinic because of the stigma surrounding HIV. The CSO warned that missed doses could increase mother-to-child transmission of HIV and sexual transmission of the disease. Interrupted treatment can also lead to opportunistic infections such as tuberculosis and HIV drug resistance. Patricia Acero, a treatment advocate and chairperson of the International Community of Women Living with HIV in Kenya, said they're holding us hostage, which personally, this deeply saddens me. I feel that, it's such a sad situation. Also, a press release issued on Tuesday, Amnesty International's Kenya office said it was deeply concerned over the drug shortages and the lack of accountability at Kenya Medical Supplies Authority. As a stopgap measure, the Kenyan government made an arrangement with the Global Fund to fight AIDS, tuberculosis and malaria to support the country with drugs for the next 3 months. These shipments started this week. Now, this is only, as I said earlier, a band-aid for a larger problem. And it makes me wonder how long that will satiate the patients throughout Kenya with the ARVs, and keep them on track with their taking times. They won't be able to skip. I'll be keeping a close eye on this, and I'll post this also to our Facebook page. All right, many thanks, and thank you for listening.
Radio Reverb.
Radio Reverb. So a little bit of community news. The Lunch Positive in Dorset Gardens, the Methodist church there, has reopened on Fridays from 12:30 p.m. for a hot sit-down lunch. It's fully COVID safe. You're on a table of maximum six people, and the tables are really spaced out. And you actually go and sort of get the food yourself, so you're not being served. So it's really good. I went there for the opening last week, and it was really great. Food was amazing. Gary and his team have done amazingly. They've served over 32,000 chilled meals and bags of groceries throughout the pandemic. So hats off to them. And then secondly, Worthing Hub now is doing face-to-face meetings on a Tuesday morning. If you are affected by HIV, or if you know anyone that is affected by HIV and they need support, please contact myself at theworthinghub@gmail.com, sorry, or number 07411-282080, or actually speak to your clinic and they'll get in touch with me. So over to you, Sue, Josh and Stephen.
That's great stuff. It's good to hear that everyone's getting back to normal, isn't it? And being sociable and can interact like that. Just a little update with the Lawson unit. So they're open, and if you go to their website, which is brightonsexualhealth.com, they'll have all the opening times and what's happening there with the COVID-19 information. So check that out. That's it for another show. It just goes so quickly, doesn't it?
I know, when we're all having fun.
Yes.
And when we do have fun, don't we, guys? I mean, people are listening and thinking, what the devil's going on that show? But we're having fun, delivering what we're talking about, important stuff. But, we're here as a community, and we really want, and let's just say on this for this opportunity, if anyone would like to come on the show, take part in the show in any shape or form, please do contact us on the HIVHour@gmail.com. And where else can we be contacted?
Well, there's a Twitter page, which is HIV_hour. And the Facebook page is, let me get this right, at HIVHourReverb. So you can join our Facebook page. And also there's a podcast, which we do, which is on iTunes and Deezer and Spotify. So just type in HIV Hour and it'll come up. You can have a listen.
So I hope you all have a good week, and we'll speak to you all and hear you soon.
HIV Hour is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.